You were moving so much before that you threw me.
Did I throw you? Yeah, well, I'm heads up. I'm going to keep moving.
Hey, you know what I mean? You know how it goes here at Underground Espionage, episode 51, Terra. How is the movement going over
there? Oh, it's great. I'm just going to wiggle around and just be so content. I might cough too. It's
hey,
gonna be great.
I had a little something there.
So happy. So
here
happy
we are. You know, it's the beginning of every episode. We just like to get the, you know, get the coughs out.
But I think the hardest part is like the sensation of like, now I had to do it. You know, before we hit record, I don't know how other people contend this. It's like sometimes you get all these things in your head and it's really hard to focus because you don't want to forget like so many things at one time that you don't know where to start.
I hear that.
And, you know, so I just kind of like wait for it to happen. That's why sometimes you may say something and then I just totally go off the rails with it.
Yes.
But and then today, though, I was experiencing this thing where I was like, oh, did I, because I'll like save articles or I'll have like little mental notes.
Yeah, the Terra
you know?
News.
Yeah, the Terra News. Basically, the Terra News is, you know, when I wake up in the middle of the night, the thing I'm still thinking about. And like just scrolling through the Terra News in my head was very funny today. Yeah. And I don't know why. So I don't even
know. You don't
know
where to go.
I don't even know what's going to come out.
Who knows what's going to come out of your mouth?
I don't. Not I.
Well, I can tell you one thing that's going to come out of your mouth is the highest of praise for our feature film today. One of our absolute favorites, Beyond the Darkness.
I mean, we have been chanting its praises for lo these many years, and now we can officially discuss
here on Underground Espionage. And of course, it will be the, you know, you'll see this pick somewheres related to this episode, but of course, famously, the great pick of Terra as Iris from Beyond the Darkness. Still is one of my all-time favorite picks of you, Terra.
You think of me that way? You mostly think of that me when you think of what
think
I look like?
I do think of you that way, and I do think of Iris being one of your heroes, idols, if you will.
I do love her.
Someone you look up to for inspiration.
Certainly admire her passion and her will, you know? Yeah. She doesn't let things get in the way of what she wants, you know? Like, she's willing to, like, if she wants this man, she's willing to go to all extremes to have him. And, you know, and she's even willing to, like, but I don't even think she deludes herself in what's going on. I think she's just, like, not trying to name the nature of the relationship as long as there is one. Anyway, we're going to get into it.
We're going to get into
it. It's such a ride. It's such a darn ride. She's so determined. Who doesn't admire that level
what are you
of
looking
determination?
At there, Tara?
Rose fell off of that. Look at that arrangement. Over
digital
there.
Frame is off. You know, I always make sure it's turned off.
And then
so
there's
I, then I got
candles
worried.
Right there that I want to clean up later. Look,
I got worried that I had digital frame on.
Well, and then here, well, I would have called it out. Now, here's one of the things, you know, that I was chuckling at prior to starting, and that is this week we have engaged in a little spring cleaning. I guess it's spring, right?
Look, I have been shouting, much like we've shouted the praises of Beyond the Darkness for so many years. This year, for these 3 months, I have been shouting that this is something is happening this year. It's at least in our little
chaos
world,
vortex.
In our chaos vortex. I've been in this just tear of this is a year for us. And continues to be that way. I feel an energy happening, and I feel a burst. I feel activated, Tara. I feel very activated, and I still do. And sometimes when you do that, a cleaning, an organization day, these things just add to it.
Yes, and you know, I declared that I was gonna execute a purge, possible or just clean my particular mess. You know, we all have our own little messy zones that we kind of keep to ourselves. And I was like, I'm going to take care of this. And I was like talking to a friend and they were like, you know, Tara, if you haven't worn something in 6 months, you really should get rid of it. And I'm like, I couldn't disagree with you more. You know what I mean? That's generally not anywhere near our philosophy in terms of retaining physical things.
We, again, you know, people come here to UE to hear that advice, hear that stuff.
You're going to hear alternate advice.
Our thing is, yeah, people always say that. And I am just a believer of, again, I mean, I wouldn't, like, with records, with movies, with books, like, I mean, you have, we have tons of stuff we haven't gotten to in years. But when that, when it hits, when you're ready, like, I would not want to ever live without Beyond the Darkness physical copy, because what, who knows?
Yeah, we've gone 6 months without watching it. You know what I mean? But
even with clothes, and especially merch and shirts,
and
yeah, and especially like shirts from of the crew and stuff like that. Like, you always want that because those are memories too. And it's just support and all that stuff. So like, I'll never get rid of anything like that, you know. But yeah,
unless there's a falling out, and then it's out.
Well, then it's
kidding.
Then
I just chuck it in the bin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then that is just
shred it. Nobody gets it.
Yeah, yeah. That, I'll say that. The older you get, the quicker that shit goes right in the trash. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's so funny because I'm like going through. I'm like, do I need this glitter fringe cocktail dress? And you know what? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Like, I do need it. I want that option in my life. If I feel like wearing a pineapple covered ball gown, I feel that I should be able to and have that readily at my disposal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think I need, you know, maybe a small suitcase full of wigs. Maybe I need a whole drawer devoted to fishnet attire.
Like, I agree.
I don't have a problem. And then, you know, the argument in my head is always, well, it doesn't take up much space, but it actually ends up taking up a lot of space because I got a bunch. But listen.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have options. Now, if it were one thing, if it were like I had like, you know, I think it would only be dreary by semi-hoarding silly articles of clothing or articles of clothing if it was like, I have 50 pairs of white socks, you know what I mean? Or just like something mundane. Now that would be dreary, you know, but
what are you going to do with those socks?
You know, Mike, the way you asked. Like, what do you know? They're like, they're not worn yet. They're unused and they're not very cute. Let's say they are those type that are kind of like ankle socks that go in shoes, but they're unworn and they have like, they say like a word on them, like run.
Ran through.
No, that's fun. See, okay. The ran through is fun. I was trying to make it really boring so they wouldn't be
so
exciting
to
you.
So there's nothing to do with
you.
Them.
Yeah. I was trying to think of the least appealing sock. like one of that gray kind of a heel and toe part. And it's like
an
ankle sock.
You know, you got me. I'm out.
They're rolled up and they've never been worn. And
yeah, you keep emphasizing that.
They're all just sitting there taking up space.
You're right, I'm out.
I mean, maybe
I'm
I
out.
Should. What do you think is the least exciting form of sock?
Well, let's move on to what you were talking about.
Well, that's what I was talking about. Anyway,
I'm going to talk about your wigs.
But I was just laughing that it's not. Well, once I got all of the hair out, I don't think I got all of it out, but I found
there's
a bunch.
No way it's impossible.
So much
there's
hair.
Literally bags and bags of hair.
But then some of it's human, some of it's not. Some of it's made into hair pieces, some of it's not. But then it was a fun journey that I got to find the ones that needed a little love, and then I got to make them pretty again. So that's been fun. I've been rolling and steaming hair.
Right before we recorded, you were taking care of some hair.
Yeah, Mike. I mean, I don't know if everybody knows, like, if you want to curl synthetic hair, some of them can handle heat and they do it well and some don't. Just depends on the type of synthetic hair. Human hair is self-explanatory, right? Yeah. You just need to make sure you're not frying it. But I enjoy doing the steam. You do the steaming to texture it. So then you get to take a steam and then let it set. It's fun. It's satisfying. It's nice. It's fun to watch, isn't it?
Look, I've been enjoying it. The excavation of the wigs, the reminiscing about when these wigs were worn or never worn.
And now it's really funny because, like, we're talking about so many and people are going to think, oh, they always see me with fake hair, but they really don't much.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I don't wear a lot of wigs around people we know because it confuses them too much. Like, I find that they're just totally distracted the whole time.
Like, is that your hair?
Well, no, they know it's not my hair. So then that's the whole thing is like, right. Oh, hey, it's like if you were wearing a wig, Mike, it'd be like, oh, there's Mike in a wig. And there's Mike again in a wig. Yeah. I've never gotten a wig on you, I don't think. Maybe try.
Hey, look.
Maybe I should.
I'm telling you, this is a big year for us, so yeah. Maybe this is the year.
Anyway, so I don't want to bore people.
I don't think it's boring. I mean, you know.
But I definitely will wear wigs more if I'm around a stranger than friends because I find that it's confusing and distracting.
But I also, I mean, people have definitely seen you in your, I'm sure we've posted the pic of you in your Candy Coster wig.
Yeah.
That's got to have been around somewhere. People have seen
it. Or my fake bangs.
Well, you
which
do
make
do
a
those.
Lot of appearances.
Yeah,
those are, those but those are human hair. They make a lot of appearances. We have a lot of models of those.
You know, it's funny, Tara. We, in the order of we've been putting these episodes out, one thing, and we usually always like to keep updated with things available, things coming out. But we actually, in the order of everything coming out, we did actually fail to note the two new initiation services tapes, but
oh shit,
one of them already sold out. Okay. So, but yeah. So that's another thing we've been working on, obviously. But the Yobai, a new project on initiation services, that physical is sold out. In Europe, it'll be available from Sasa to Hata, and in Canada from Scream and Rive.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still get the digital, obviously. And the Buzzsaw, there's like a handful left. But we've been assembling those. And that's been, if anyone's seen the covers of those, that has been a fun thing to be doing, especially
so
printing those off at Kinko's. We've had a lot of adventures this year, just in general.
That has been a joy. That has been a joy.
And if anyone's waiting for their copy, because obviously we've only posted the censored versions, especially of the Buzzsaw, you'll... Once you see what we've been copying in public at the Hollywood Kinko's, it should add to the experience.
I love the Buzzsaw so much. I hope everybody understands how much love went into that particular release.
Yeah.
This kind of relates to it. And so then, Mike, the other thing I was chuckling about, because when I was right before we started recording, I was looking for articles that I saved because I have like a little file. And so then I'm just like, cruise it again. And why did I save this one about Shaw's Gerd? I was reading about various rodents, as you know I love to do. And it says this North American rodent was observed mating 224 times in 2 hours, making it one of the animals that has the most sex. And like...
Would you say it again? I zoned out, and
I
then
know
I heard
you
the
did.
Most sex, and then I came back
well,
in.
Well, see, you probably didn't know what a gerd was, because I didn't either. J-I-R-D. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce it, but I just don't even care enough to find out if that's correct. I guess the Latin would be Meriones shawi, and it's a North African desert rodent that was observed mating 24 times in 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
But,
I mean,
like, why do you call that mating? So it's like 2 hours, so 112 times an hour.
And this guy's blasting
that many
times.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's like, but also that means it's like 112 times. So like every like 30 seconds, essentially, it's going in. So it's like, it can't last long.
Yeah.
Mating.
Yeah.
You call that mating? Yeah. Just running up and run.
Blasting.
That's more of a
run
and dump.
That's a run and dump.
That's a run and dump. So I thought... You know, that was worthy of saving.
Yeah.
But also, I just love the idea of researchers, like, spending their days this way. Just, like, watching gerds, trying to see how many times the gerds mate. And, like, and do you think that at some point they're just, like, in a hide, you know? Or they, like, have the... They've waited for this den to be built, and then they're just laying there, like, what am... Looking at this rodent just activity, and they have babies,
away.
And they're just, like... Oh, the gerd is banging, and now it's banging again. It's banging again, and then just like your whole day, and then you go out on like some date with a person you don't know, and they're like, "What do you do?" And you're like, "I count the amount of times that North African rodents bang,
yeah,
like, yeah. per hour." And they're like, "Fascinating, how many times?" And they're like,
224
times in 2 hours. Can you believe that? Isn't that amazing? And then the person's like, are you making this shit up?
Yeah.
Like, who is this person? Like, what do you think sex is? Like, I would question that too. I'd be like, explain to me how you know exactly what that is. So I thought that might be interesting. And then some other things, if you wanted to know things that bang a lot that are in the
you know what
things that are in the same like tier
okay
you know
I'm here.
Not
I'm
you, dear.
What?
So, hamsters can have sex up to 75 times a day. You know, and that's why you should get all the same, because, like, you'll end up with... Do people end up with a bunch of hamsters? I don't know. I'm not really. I know they eat them, so maybe they don't. Anyway, and lions have been known to copulate 157 times in 55 hours. Now...
So it's like a little over 2 days.
So I feel like they're juicing these numbers when they're like 157 times in 55 hours.
Yeah,
like, why are they doing per day
in
48 hours? Like in that like fifth, like in the last 7 hours after 48 hours, like they really needed that number to be big. So probably in that last 7 hours, they did it like 20 times.
Right.
Because otherwise they wouldn't have included it, right? So it had to be like significant. Or did the lions have this giant bang orgy session and they stayed up for 55 hours?
Right.
They were like, we just killed an antelope. We're going to eat it.
And we're going to bang
it. We're
going to
have a big fuck party because it's like a lion and the pride. I don't know how many of these lionesses are involved.
Yeah.
And they stay up for days and then they finally all go to sleep and they're like, time's up. That's why it's 55
hours. Yeah, it was like a clock going.
Because it seems like such a strange number to include. So, I don't know. It's interesting.
I mean, look, you know, I'd be willing to, you know, participate in this scientific
well, endeavor. Here's another fun one. And then female giant pandas are very picky, apparently. So they have a short window of fertility, which is generally about 72. Or could up to 72 hours a year.
Whoa.
So, like, they got a few days every year where they're like, all right, you get a pass. And that's it.
Bruce.
So, interesting, riveting it's news
absolutely,
from this front.
Absolutely. You know, wig news, animal
Wiglet
copulations.
Hair piece. Like, I thought, you know, you can.
I feel like there's so much. I feel like we've just been, like, on a tear, but, you know, I guess it has been heavy in the wigs, has been sort of the. Kind of theme.
We've been doing way more. We've been copying pornography.
Yes. No, obviously.
Cutting it into various shapes, gluing it to things.
Yes. Yes.
You know, procuring papers, tapes, doing things of this
nature.
Oh,
no, of course.
We've actually been making crazy new playlists and found a lot of new bands that we're
into. Look, we're gearing up. We're always trying to beef up into the upcoming... You know,
what
Surfing Dead
for
the
that
year.
I like so damn much?
The Play Dead. That's great.
Yeah, Play
UK,
Dead.
UK, 1981.
Great band.
Great stuff. Yeah, no,
old
it's been.
Old news, great band.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, always trying to beef up for any of our upcoming nights at the Mermaid. The next one will be in April. I'll wait to announce the date when it's confirmed, but usually it is the second Monday, but
generally
sometimes things get moved around, kind of like when dead bodies get moved around, kind of like when you dig up the body of a loved one and bring it back home, kind of like what happens in Beyond the Darkness.
Yes, those are just a few of the wonderful things that happen in Beyond the Darkness. Joe D'Amato did it again. If you're watching the credits, it says music by the Goblins.
The Goblins. I always like when they're credited as the Goblins in some of the old movies.
Yeah, I'm just going to ring to it. The Goblins is cute.
Yeah, this is, you know, Joe D'Amato, of course, Anthropophagus, Absurd, Emmanuel movies, Porno Holocaust. I mean, so many movies.
What have you
done
to Solange?
What have you done to Solange? So, you know, obviously one of the great Italian directors, but I have to say this is my favorite Joe D'Amato movie. Yep. And I think he has said at least close to that it's his favorite. If it's not one of his favorites, it's his favorite. And it's one that every year or two that we watch it, we get something new out of it. And it always sticks with us until the next watch. It is a haunting movie. It is a morbid movie. It's a grim movie. And it is a movie that sticks to you. In many ways, it goops to you.
Yeah.
It sticks you. It gets under your skin. It clings to you. And this watch, much like many movies, you know, as the years go on when we revisit movies, things like, you know, feel closer.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, you know, this is one of those where you feel like, I don't know. I could see this happening.
Oh my God, I was taking a drink when you did that. Oh my God.
I saw you taking a drink and
thank you for waiting.
Yeah.
Dude, you know, like, trying to get a spit take.
I could see, you
could see how, like, if I just suddenly died, yes. You would be like, I don't know, why shouldn't I go dig up her body? Yes. Again.
And bring it home,
like,
yeah.
Let me just, let's just throw out kind of what it is, so then we can go to all the moving parts. So I think that before, we'll do a quick summation. So this is filmed in Bressanone. There's a strange quality to the atmosphere, to the choice in clothing, you know? Because you think it's just going to be kind of typical Italian, but it has this other element to it that looks like semi-German. And then at times I was thinking like Romanian, something like Eastern European, something of that nature. But it's all because they did film it in the northern mountain Italian town of Bressanone or Brixen. And it's in Tyrol, and it's one of the oldest towns in Tyrol, and it blends Austrian and Italian cultures together. And the population is like German Italian. So it explains a lot of the strangeness, the strange families that are present, and kind of Iris, who is Franca Stopi, amazing actress, like her family's just odd appearance, behavior, and mannerisms.
Yeah. So it's very unique setting, and it really adds to the atmosphere.
So we're in this isolated northern Italian town where a young man who is 22 but lost his parents much earlier is living with a maid who is an unusual lady, and she is particularly obsessed with him, and he is obsessed with his fiance, and her name is Anna. He also enjoys taxidermy, by the way, just kind of a different hobby he has. Important to note in his wonderful villa that he also engages in dabbling in taxidermy, much like I dabble in wigging. And so so Anna falls gravely ill, potentially through the dark arts of Iris and her strange mountain clan who are performing voodoo rites things that are seemingly of that nature.
Yeah, you see, immediately Anna's in the hospital. It's how we meet her, and we cut to Iris utilizing a voodoo doll.
Yes, yeah. Well, but again, I don't know. It might not be singularly within the voodoo culture, Mike. There might be, you know, other pockets that would use some sort of totem to engage in
Are you saying
non-direct
that you don't
violence?
Want to offend voodoo?
No, I'm saying that I want to give other dark arts some credit say that they aren't necessarily appropriating voodoo culture. Should they choose to use some waxen figure as a representation of somebody
make
to
sure
commit violence against
them? We want to make sure everyone's included.
Not included. I want to make sure that they get, you know, at least that
the credit.
Because I don't want them. Fair enough. You know what I mean? There are many things that, although we primarily think of them as coming from one culture, they could span many cultures. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. Because I'm not really familiar. I don't necessarily engage in that practice, and I haven't researched it fully. So
You know what?
I'm not in a position to speak. I just wanted to take this little side road up a mountain town.
I think all the listeners have now forgiven you.
Yeah, they don't have to forgive me. It's okay. You can hold it against me, but I'll redeem myself later, I swear. So maybe not. I probably won't. It's okay. What we want to say is, Mike, I was summing things up.
I'm sorry.
That was the opposite of a summation.
I'm doing you.
That was.
I'm like interrupting, and I'm jumping. I'm derailing you. I apologize.
So Anna passes away, whether or not it's supernatural or natural causes. And poor Frank, the gentleman that loves taxidermy, the orphan who loves taxidermy, is now left alone. And what's he going to do with his grief? He didn't even get to make love to Anna before she passed away. Well, he is going to get comfort from his maid Iris, whether he wants to or not. And then he is going to dig up his lover, and Iris then knows she has him, because then, after that, she has something on him, so now he can't get away from her. So she is going to encourage his worst part of himself while he engages in his most passionate and self-destructive urges through his grief process.
But isn't that the great thing about this movie? I love that all the actors and people talking about this movie talk about how it's a love story.
Yes, yes.
And isn't that just the great thing about diving into it? You know, mm-hmm. just the insanity and the chaos of it.
Well, I think that, so should Anna have not died, like he probably wouldn't have been a murderer, right? Like he didn't show any evidence other than being in the taxidermy that he was engaging in violence. Maybe his strangeness of having a weirdly close relationship with his maid, who I assume was his nursemaid, maybe growing up when he's like left in this villa. She's older than him. He's got, so if we want to talk about like the characters, so Frank is, hold on, I will, I'm gonna,
you look at us being
it's
so professional.
Kieran Cantor.
Yes.
And he is, he's got one of those like angelic faces, you know, like perfect skin, perfect little dimpled chin, blue eyes, like perfect for like an Italian film, right?
Totally.
And then, so he's, you know, vibrant and young. And then we have Franca Stopi, who is just like an amazing actress, but her, the look of her face is so chilling and severe.
Mesmerizing, one of the greatest characters, you know.
She's an amazing character actor. She's an amazing actress.
But for just for you and I, Tara, something that is just, as we've said, gone throughout our life is Iris, is Franca Stopi from this movie. She's been in other movies, The Other Hell we love, other stuff she's
violence
in, we love.
Violence in a Women's Prison.
We love Violence in a Women's Prison. But this is the ultimate role. And what's great is that she has an interview on The Extras, and it's... it's either her first movie or one of her first movies.
Because she had been doing stage acting.
And she says how it was, she got the role pretty quickly and didn't really have time to really prepare for it. But I'm like, that's insane, because in my mind, she just embodies Iris. So, but also, maybe that goes to the thing where sometimes when you have to jump right in, you don't overthink it. Right?
Yeah,
you know,
she
so
said
sometimes
she
there
didn't,
is that.
She said they sent the script, but she didn't really have a chance to read it.
So
when
maybe
she
that
was jumping
goes
in.
To the, when you just dive in, sometimes you get that better thing as opposed to over preparing.
Yeah.
You know?
And I love that she actually dated Frank. I'm just going to call him by his character name, sorry. When he was Turkish, but he lived in the U.S., and that. And that they actually dated
for a
while.
Wee
bit. Yeah,
she said. Yeah.
So that was great. But I digress. Her performance, and like the other thing about her teeth are strange. Like her teeth are pretty prominent, and her bones in her face are really prominent, and her just severe, slicked down hair, her turtleneck, again an aesthetic that I absolutely adore. But her just the severity of her nature. Yeah. And the coldness but determination, I think, is what is so...
The willpower.
What is so remarkable about Iris. But now we can kind of go through. So we open on a scene. Again, the black arts that are happening as we see poor Anna. And I think part of the character of Anna that makes her so also seem frail, it's... Cinzia Monreal, Anna Volki is who she's playing, and she is so thin. Like, her hip bones could cut glass.
Painful.
Painfully thin, bitterly thin, but it also gives her this, she's like blonde and her eyes are sunken in from the makeup on her, but it gives her this very weakened, frail quality throughout this whole film. And so you see her and she's so sweet, and she also has the face of an angel, and as she's like gasping away and struggling to live, we see this suffering, beautiful flower. We just see Iris reveling in the violence and you know, stabbing some little totem creature in order to do it. And so you just see how cold and malicious she is. And then we see Frank, he's delivered a baboon. It looks like Shakma.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
I wonder if it is.
They
kept the baboon asleep the whole time.
Yeah, the baboon does live.
Franca Stopi said it was really upsetting, which I would have been upset
But Chacma and Unmasking the Idol, I mean, those are... Well, I think Unmasking the Idol is U.S. made. It could be. I mean, Chacma is definitely...
Well, how many baboon actors are there?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just curious. Anyway, so Anna the frail flower, wakes up, and she was like... The nurse says, "Are you feeling better?" She's like, "Can I have some makeup?" and then they just like, sure. And then they just smear some blush on her face. It could have been her mother,
but
too.
But so as much as I've always thought of you relating mostly to Iris in this movie, that was the first moment I was like, Tara, that would be like, you're like, can I just have a little makeup?
Can you just, I feel terrible. Can you bring me a little makeup, please? I think when I was in the hospital, did I put on makeup? I
don't know. Did you? No. Well, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't remember much. Not the times when I wasn't allowed to walk and not because you weren't there for maybe the first few days. I think eventually I did. Yeah. I'm sure I put on a little blush.
I would imagine.
You know, but your skin looks so nice when you're in the hospital because you get all that rest and you're sedated and you're just kind of hydrated. I was super hydrated because I wouldn't stop drinking water. So
the
catheter,
you could just... Free,
God,
just...
it was amazing. And just like drink gallons and gallons of water, keep them working. Dump my piss bag. Go ahead. And then, so it was
great.
Hey,
girly. Hey,
come here. Let's fill it up. Slop it over onto the floor and get this thing. I'm not giving you any more water. But my skin was glowing. It looked beautiful. Anyway, so you know, he runs to his lady's aid. Frank runs to Anna and she gasps her last breath. Then he comes home distraught, and what does Iris say? This is when we know that the relationship is a strange one. Iris starts hugging him and comforting him and says, "No one left to take care of you now. Only me, your little Iris. No one knows you the way Iris does. Little Frank will be so happy with his Iris." And then she pulls out her tit, and he starts nursing on her. And then that's the first moment where you're like, this is going to be a really good movie.
Yeah, and even just the grimness of the way Anna's in the hospital, it is a very morbid, downbeat tone. This is not a, you know, a colorful giallo. I don't even consider this a giallo necessarily. Yeah. I mean, there is murder. I consider this just truly its own movie.
Yeah, and I think people do, but
I mean,
again,
it's one of those things where you just throw it in
And even them saying like, well, it has a killer, a fanatical killer, a serial killer.
I always
killer.
Sort of forget
it's like,
that.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I sort of forget that he kills people because it doesn't really, that's not, to me, I do think of this just as a love story. So, and again, I don't mind when people put things in categories. It doesn't matter. The overriding atmosphere of this movie, especially that one piano line that plays a lot, just that down, sad, empty piano line.
Yeah.
It just establishes this overall depressing, dark, downbeat.
Yeah, when we're
atmosphere.
Seeing Anna, when we're seeing Frank mourning, we get these sad piano, mournful songs. But then there's other like frenzied, violent times where we get just straight up amazing goblin
electronics. Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
like the sequenced lines.
Totally.
Yeah,
it's great.
They're
the soundtrack is one of the great, and one of the great things Severin did with the Blu-ray was you get the soundtrack CD with it.
And then one of the things that I love that Joe D'Amato said in the extras, what a guy, huh? He said he just really wanted to make a film that will make people puke. And even for this one, too, he wanted to make something gross. And I it's so funny, like, look, everybody, you're here with us. Thank you for being here with us at Underground Espionage. And there is a possibility that we are desensitized a bit through the films we watch, through the repeat watching.
Through the life we've led.
So there may be a lack of sensitivity sometimes to especially things that are gross. So, like, I will say, like, we were eating dinner watching this, and I was questioning, like, should I be eating dinner watching this? I was okay, but there were points where I was like,
We've also seen this so many times, and I knew I had the same feeling. I'm like, do I want to eat while watching this? And I was like, we've seen this enough. Yeah. But I will say that, I do always think of this as being one of the, like, the term gross is, would use that for many scenes in this. There is a visceral grossness to the organs, to the dumping of the, you know, death slop. Water, the yeah. slop, the scene where Iris is eating. So I always do think of this as being... And again,
stew in the body
it's
stew.
Just the way that it's filmed has that quality of like you really feel like you're watching someone's guts being pulled out because it isn't very over the top. It, it's over the top in
the fact that
in
it's
the,
there,
in the stuff,
yeah.
But it's not an over the top.
It's not like when it's not like Evil Dead when
you
they
said that when you're watching
people.
It. It's not Evil Dead. It's
yeah.
not. It,
they're not dousing people in buckets of yeah. blood. It's not. It's not it, like The Descent or
again,
whatever.
It comes
where it's
from,
just
exactly
hyper realized gore.
It comes from a very still and morbid place, and to me, that's what makes it that much more effective in being not gratuitous, even though. There's
it is.
Just
yeah, but,
buckets
yeah.
of guts. It to me, it just it adds to the entire thing in the movie, and it couldn't be this without that.
There's like a kind of a pragmatic approach to the gore that the characters in the film take, right?
Yes, you know, it's all
because it's just kind
meaningful.
Of something that they
have to do.
Well, it's something they have to deal with, right?
That's
like,
what I mean.
Oh, well,
yeah.
If you want to taxidermy the animal, you got to get rid of the guts. If you want to, you know, get do
dismember this, body, you got
to. If you want to have your dead girlfriend embalmed and living in your home for the rest of your lives, then, you know, you need to deal with her entrails so that they don't rot. You need to pull her eyeballs out and have glass eyes in because otherwise it's going to get gross.
It's
if you
very...
want to keep her yeah. in her pristine condition, then, you know, you have to deal with all of these things. So it's not in the same way that, you know, other things are. Now, there is a fingernail ripping scene that is a little... gratuitous.
So he gets a little, he's getting just a little,
he's got a little
hot.
Got a little loopy. Anyway, so I did love that Joe D'Amato said he wanted to make a film that makes people puke, but his approach is that he was saying like shock is a great way to engage the audience in a film. And I think that, you know, I guess I haven't really thought of something that way because when you hear people talking about their like craftsmanship and their art and their lighting and their choice of character and like all these things, you don't really hear, like, discussing the shock of it, but I think that Joe D'Amato makes things that are really shocking but also engaging. And
yeah.
And, but I do agree, like, I am shocked by what I see in this film time and time again, even when I've seen it before, and I find it so engaging. And it's like I'm shocked by watching it, such
right.
as the scene where Iris is... eating a bowl of they've dismembered somebody, they've gotten rid of all the, as you say, Mike, death water, all the juices that she was dissolved in. They're dealing in this like grisly,
the hitchhiker,
yeah, this grisly task, and Iris comes in her rubber apron and kind of coarsely washes her hands, rinses them off in
barely
water.
And there's she's still got dirt and guts,
yeah,
and like blood on her,
two bowls of stew, throws one down on the table, and then she's eating it. And then she just starts, you know, chewing with her mouth open.
Yeah.
And kind of like getting stew on her face and just, you know, unaffectedly just slop eating, housing some stew, as you would say, Mike.
In order to make him puke.
Yeah. And then he does. But it's great and it's so effective. And it's like one of the least violent and also just, it's not gore. It's not anything. It's stew. But for some reason, that's like what is disgusting.
Well, yeah, and it comes right after, like you said, Tara, that dismemberment scene, which is one of the classic scenes in the movie when they're dismembering the hitchhiker. This is the scene where you took your inspiration for your outfit.
Of course. Oh,
she's
yeah.
chopping the body up, pulling things apart. They're throwing it in the bath. It's melting. The skull's coming up. It's just it's so. And the way she's doing it is so, Iris is doing it is so methodical mm-hmm. and so, but also with the sense of, there is a sense of like, she's very into it. And then when he's watching her do it, he's getting into it.
Oh, but I also think he's disgusted.
But I think
too.
It's both.
Yes.
I think he's disgusted at the feelings he's having for Iris and she's loving watching him squirm.
Yeah. But I think that. What I love about her performance is, especially in this part, when Iris is dismembering the body in their bathroom so that they can throw it in a tub and dissolve it into some goo. The way she's on the floor and dealing with it while he's disgusted, and she looks up at him, and after she like hacks an arm off, she gives this little smile.
It's
like
so good.
But it's just, it's like a aren't you proud of me smile. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, look, I'm doing this for you. Aren't you proud of me?
So
like
good.
Like it's like she has this little moment of like, is this making you happy? Like it, I don't, the subtlety of it, I think is really, really amazing. So yes, amazing soundtrack. So we have this gentleman, his beloved dies. And I do like the many lines through it. So we have this nosy coroner, like as his beloved dies, her rich family is like, just bury her. Here's a check. I don't want to deal with it. I'm leaving town. I'm sad. And so this nosy coroner hears about this large check that's given to, you know, the place that she's going to be buried. And then he kind of pops up again, like after the body is unearthed, he notices that maybe Frank did that. You know, maybe he has unearthed the body. He starts following him. He starts popping up in the villa, like nosing about, looking into his finances to decide if he's rich so he can see if he can scam him. So this whole time you think that this nosy coroner is going to blackmail him or call the police or do something. But I love that kind of through line in the story that just kind of ends up in like him almost being like, if it was a book, he would be writing the tale.
Because he really was truly
just the witness. He didn't really get involved in any way other than just kind of being present and watching all of this deranged behavior, you know?
No, totally. Yeah, yeah. I love to, so I mean, obviously, so yes, Frank, you know, has to kill the hitchhiker. I love the scene where he's coming back from the cemetery with her in the back. And
oh, yeah, so all the kills. So first we have, Frank has that. We were laughing at this, like one of those European cars that we just don't understand.
What's going on?
I don't know what this thing is. Like, it's like, it looks like a Volkswagen van, but there's no windows and it has maybe two back seats. But then the trunk in the back has an upper trunk and a lower trunk. I do not understand what's going on with this, this funky car. But you know what happens when you have one of those is that you can go dig up your love. Sticker in the bottom trunk, you have a flat tire, you pull the tire out of the top trunk. Some little hitchhiker from London who likes to roll some sort of spliffs and just show up in your van can just hop on in. You don't even know what's happening because there are just no windows. And then when, you know, you're trying to deal with making sure your late lady love doesn't decompose, then she can just pop on out and get a little scared. So this first murder, I must blame this Londoner for his string of bloodlust, because Mike, think about it, like he wasn't trying to kill anybody, he wasn't gonna do anything, but then once he did kill someone, he's already got a body, so he's got something to hide. But then she pops up, she tries to like attack him when she sees the body. She doesn't know the situation. He didn't kill his lady love, he was just trying to like have her around the rest of his life. So then she starts to attack him, so then he actually has to deal with her.
Yep.
So then he rips her fingers out and chokes her out, and then they gotta drag her to the bathroom. We all know the story, but
as we just told you 5 minutes
ago. But truly
ago.
You know, without that, like maybe he wouldn't have continued having to deal with them. Because then what's he doing next? He's jogging?
Well, I was going to say, I love this one. So we have the jogger just jogging away.
And he's so fit. I mean, everybody in this. And it made me think, like, what is their bread made of? You know, what is in their sausage? These people look so so thin.
It's true. It's true.
Although we don't see anybody eating anything other than stew. That might be the deal.
I do love the jogger. So she's so great. Sprains her ankle. He offers to bring her back and take care of her. But now, do you think at this point he thinks he's going to murder her, or is he just thinking about banging her? And then once he gets there, he's like, ah, I'm going to murder her.
No,
what do you think?
Because he didn't. Well, that was the problem. He was banging her and they were fine and everything was good. And then he wanted to look at his, you know, dead lover, his dead fiance.
Sees it,
and she sees it and freaks out.
Yeah. Instead of just being cool about
it. Instead of just being cool about it and being like, what's that?
and just getting into it.
She started freaking out.
So he's gonna bite her neck off.
He bites her, voice box in front of her throat out. And then they have to deal with that one too.
And I do think that Iris, I feel that she is excited the deeper he gets into murdering. She then has more of a hold on Frank.
She owns him, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, but it's just such a strange scene too. Like one, Frank is always, like, when he's dealing with the savage things, he's always wearing a white shirt with his, like, clear rubber apron.
Hey, man. Dangerous.
I think Iris was onto something with the, like, dark navy, black.
Black turtleneck. Yeah, I mean, the black turtleneck short sleeves is basically, as you say, anytime you watch this, like, yes, my fashion icon is Iris.
And it's, what's so funny about us, Mike? Like, we are so used to embalming scenes. We didn't even mention the, like, embalming of Anna. Like, I think people may think that one's shocking when they do the,
well, again, I think it's part of it being why it works is because it is so, he's doing it for a reason. Yeah.
But and it's also like, why wasn't she embalmed by her family? Like, he embalmed
her. Yeah, yeah, I mean. Yeah. But yeah, I know the pulling out of the guts and that whole scene.
The brain sucking through your nose.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
we've seen videos of that in real life.
Sure.
I did get a little queasy once watching one of those videos. I was hot. I was dehydrated. What are you going to do? But I digress. But I do love that, after doing their grisly duty, everything's done, and Frank's just sitting there kind of like, I don't know, maybe reflecting on where he's gotten. And then Iris comes over he pukes and she starts rubbing his stomach from behind. And then she says, my little Frank is better now. And, like, he's just watching his dead Anna while Iris is, like, rubbing him and then, like, starts, like, jerking him off. Like, I love the, like, the fetish of this.
Oh, I know. I know. It's totally erotic.
But I think what's so compelling and shocking is just the strangeness of how, like, Frank is so devoted to his dead fiance, girlfriend, whatever. Frank is so devoted to Anna. And Iris is so obsessed with Frank. And then Frank, just through lack of caring about anything anymore, is just like going on off on this murder spree. And then Iris is like thrilled and like joyful and kind of dancing around that she just finally owns him. And that she's going to be one of the family and she's going to be like a real lady. Like the whole thing is it's unusual.
And like I said,
it's unusual. It's unique. It's there are not many films like this.
There's really no other film like this, I would say.
Yeah, and then one of my favorite scenes. I mean, again, it adds to the gross out factor too. Is when Iris is telling after the second person disappears and the police come by. Iris is like, it's really time we get rid of this body. Like, we got to get rid of Anna. She can't stay. And he was like, whatever happens, she has to stay. I'll even marry you. It doesn't matter. No matter what, she has to stay. So Iris is so thrilled, and she invites her family over to have a suckling pig at her manor house. And her family is so they're
strange.
The rustic Italian German people of the mountains, and everyone, like all the women have mustaches, and everybody's, unattractive in an off-putting way, not yes. unattractive in a charming
yeah,
sort of
definitely
way.
Definitely off-putting.
And it's so just her backwards, gross family sitting around a suckling pig. And as he walks in and he sees the family he's marrying into, he's just like horrified and can't speak. It's another just like amazing scene that I love so much. Good old Iris. But she perseveres.
She does. But, he obviously regrets his decision. But it's like, this is the world of madness. The world of madness and death, like they say in Fascination, mm-hmm. right? That he is in now. So he just has to you have to just take it, man.
Well, and he went out to, like, have a little fun. And he did go to the local disco. And he meets a fantastic dancer. Very wide
Great
stance.
Great dancer, yeah.
Very wide stance. Really, her dancing style, it's incomparable. It's great. She's just like arms out, sway. She was kind of like, she looked like she's doing a full-on aerobics workout, but I love it. Her hair is so fluffy. She just keeps shimmying the shoulders. She's getting wild. Starts rowing a boat. And then she's just like so proud of herself, walking around with her dress with pockets. People are just like, oh, my dress has pockets. And then, you know, she goes home with old Frank because she's looking for fun, clearly. But she takes a quick bath with green soap and shows off her candy bar nips.
Hey, you know what? Fantastic. And, you know, she's one of the lucky ones.
Well, he told her to get away because who comes over but Anna's sister, who looks identical to Anna. And it's like Frank had never noticed before because some time has passed. And then he sees her in the face and he's like, get out of here now while you still can. And it's like, oh, wow. So she made it. But now we have a problem because Iris was going to be the woman of the house. She was the one that was going to own Frank. But now that there's another woman who looks identical to Anna, do you think for 1 second he's going to pass up the live version of his lady?
No way. And especially the mental state he's in at this point? No way.
No. And it's so, but you know, I also kind of blame him for the things that happen. Cause he's going to drive this lady home all the way out in the villa, took her away from the discotheque. So he's going to go drive her away. And what does he say to Iris? You know, I blame him for this problem. He says, don't let her get away. Whatever you do, don't let her get away. And he is not specific enough in saying that. Like, we know what Iris is like.
We know what she's thinking.
Like, if he should have said, whatever you do, don't kill her.
You're right. Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, can you keep her in this home? Don't kill her. I think would have been like if he was really thinking clearly. Clearly he wasn't. But that would be the right thing to say to Iris. But what would. So you, Mike, if you're Iris, what do you think when somebody says don't let her get away?
I mean, you know, she's. I'm going to do what I can. And if that means murder, I'm going to murder.
No, I think she thinks turn out the lights, knock her out, and stab her in the face.
Well, there you go.
You know, but she doesn't get to stab her in the face, but still. She does, you know, knock her out.
I do like this final confrontation scene with all of them in the room, the dark room, the fighting, the back and forth, the stabbing, the biting. I like that he just goes for, like...
The final confrontation between... So, again, so what happens is, if we're going to talk, like, speak psychologically about this film... So what we have is this point where Iris is still trying to maintain her rank within the household. She doesn't want this other person to supplant her place next to Frank. And so when he's trying to keep her from killing her, Iris is like, no, I've been through so much. I killed that first bitch, and now I'm going to kill this one, and you are mine. And so Frank is like kind of lashing out at her barbarism and what she's willing to do. So you know that the two coming together, it's going to be just wildly violent. So what happens, you know, Iris runs in and so they start fighting and tussling, and Iris stabs him in the crotch. And we know what he likes to do. He's a biter. So what's he do? He bites off half of her face.
Yeah. They're just tearing each other to pieces.
And so Iris is not like some wilting flower. You can't just like voodoo doll her to death. So she's going to yank his eyeball out. So we have another eye getting pulled out. And then like it's a he stab, she stab situation back and forth as they are, you know, making mincemeat of each other. And it's just such an amazing scene when you see their, you know, their final coming together, their final violent clash. And he does stab Iris the most, so he wins. But his last thing is he has to save the other Anna's sister. I can't remember her name right now. Elena. He has to save Elena. So with his last bit of energy, he carries her down to the basement and he turns on the incinerator, so we're made to believe that he has thrown her in there and burned her up. But is that what happened, Mike?
It's not what happened.
But it's not what happened at all. But again, we have this coroner who had been really trying to find an angle. He was going to send pictures of the dead body to the parents to get the money. He was going to blackmail Frank and say that he knows about the body to get money. But instead, he found his ultimate angle because, you know, he's got to think. You got to think on your feet if you're going to be doing this sort of thing. So he's like, if I bring the body back, then the people at the cemetery will just pay me so that the body is returned. And that's how I'm going to get my dough.
It is true, Tara.
Yeah, it is true. But, you know, everybody's going to have to, like, everybody knows what happened. Should I say what happened?
Well, sure.
Oh, so at the last moment, so we think he's returned Anna's body. We think that Elena's body has been burned up. It's returned. It's laid in a casket. They put the cup top on the casket, and then the lady pops up and screams it wasn't Anna, it was her sister. Oh my God. Beyond, but it was an amazing ending. It was terrifying. It was so good.
Darkness. This is just, you know, like I said, I this morbid, sick love story really felt, you know, really just felt on this watch that, yeah. I
could the see finale it. Tremendo. I could That's see what Frank Estope called
I
it.
I could see you getting into this situation, probably. Yeah, you know.
I don't have a sister who looks identical to me.
Well,
I don't think you'd get me confused for my brother.
Not necessarily. Like, you know, not exactly with that sort of situation, but just in general.
Yeah. You kind of see, like, you understand the slippery slope that this gentleman was in.
And
this is a time before camera phones. Everybody's like, he's in an isolated village. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know what I mean? There's a lot more leeway.
But ultimately,
a lot more secrets.
But that's the thing, like, ultimately, that's why it's not exact, because I see, you know, Iris, I see you, you know. So it's like, you're not necessarily the dead, you know, fiance, but, so it's like a mix of all of it. But ultimately, Terry, you're my Iris.
Oh, this is...
And I do believe that you would help me chop up a body if needed.
Well, I did scoop the dead bunny off our porch when the cat brought it to us. I have a high tolerance for gore.
Yeah. You'll clean some bones. Yeah. You know, we will have just bones all around our place.
Yeah.
And you will wear black turtlenecks.
Yeah, I'll wear a black
severe
turtleneck.
Severe look.
Love a severe look.
And you will have a maniacal look in your face when you're doing these things. Oh, this is just, you know.
It's so unique in the many angles that it's coming from, the fetish, the passion, the obsession, the violence, the scenery again. I mean, like all of these elements just make this such a unique watch. And I agree with you, Mike. It's like, it seems weird to call it a Jolly.
I never think of it that way. Yeah.
I don't necessarily think of it that way. I just think of it as its own thing.
It's truly its own thing.
Yeah. But whatever it is, it will make you want to puke. It will shock you. It will engage you. It will make you consider the nature of love, obsession, and passion.
That's
it
how
will
I
make you
feel.
Question yourself and say, could I do that?
For me, it was more the situation? Love, obsession, and passion.
Yeah.
Much less the puking, more diving into the love, obsession, and passion of this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, great. I love it.
Oh, and the soundtrack's fantastic.
Yeah,
so.
as we've said many times, it's amazing. So pick up the Severin Blu-ray with the soundtrack CD. Fantastic. Not sure what's coming next here for UE, but something will be coming next. We'll see. I don't know. Who knows when?
But after watching the extras, I really want to see Emmanuel and the Last Cannibal.
Yeah, that one we haven't seen. And then also the Devil's Wedding Night. The Devil's Wedding Night. I want to see both.
Yeah,
those.
I want to watch that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely going to get into his own. Well, we'll see what happens in the next episode. Hey, who knows? Who knows when it'll come? Who knows what'll be on it? We don't even know.
Nope.
You don't know. We don't know. But when it happens, it happens. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for the support. We'll talk to you next time.